This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The future is in the hands of our young people. But what kind of future are they prepared to build? Young people tend to vote less avidly than other demographics, but not in last year's midterms. The turnout numbers from 2018 are staggering. While early voting across every age group increased compared to the 2014 midterms, the surge was strongest among voters ages 18 to 29. More than 3 million voters from that age group cast their ballots early. That's an increase of 118%. Our 1A Across America team met Jillian Jacobs, a high school senior in Birmingham, Alabama. Jacobs says the president has activated young people in a big way.
Donald Trump's presidency has basically kind of shifted this country to be more woke, as young people say. His presidency has allowed younger people to take a stance, like Justin said, and speak up and want to have more involvement with the way that this government or country is being ran.
So what might that involvement look like? And what might that mean for the 2020 elections? We have two guests joining us from our Across America partner stations. Joining us from Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor is Kate Westa, a junior at the University of Michigan. She is co-president of We Listen, a student group that has civil conversations about tense political issues. Kate, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us from WBHM Public Radio in Birmingham, Alabama, is Justin Smith, a junior at Winona High School. Justin, welcome.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us from Yale University is freshman Matt Post. He's also a national field strategist for March for Our Lives. Matt, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
Let's start with general impressions about the State of the Union address and or the Democratic rebuttal. Kate Westa, let me start with you. What did you think?
I thought it was a pretty good job by Trump. It really energized his base, I think, a lot of the Republicans there. There are obviously a few things that I disagree with, but overall I think that he did a pretty good job, you know, touching on the importance of the state of our union and how we should keep America great and all of those great things that he's known for talking about.
That was the president's address. What about the rebuttal, Kate?
The rebuttal was a good job as well. I agree with a lot of what Stacey Abrams said. Obviously, I'm more on the right, so I was more keen on Trump's, but I think she did a good job touching on a lot of the things that he did as well.
Justin Smith, what about you? Your impressions of the State of the Union and the rebuttal?
Right. Well, of course, after the initial State of the Union address, I was very angry. And I was angry because I felt like President Trump talked about children that were born and unborn, but he failed to mention anything regarding gun reform for the kids who were killed in school shootings. Another example is how the president used the story of a child cancer survivor, which I believe was for applause. He repeatedly proposed cutting the budget for the National Institute of Health, but here you are applauding and advertising a story of a young cancer survivor. And I also found it extremely disgusting how men could be in a room and cheer about making a decision about a woman's body. I believe it's her body and it's her choice. And amongst for Miss Stacey Abrams, I feel that her speech was very amazing. It was very well needed. And I absolutely love how she did not go against our president. I believe that she's such a powerful woman and with a powerful voice. And I love how she said, we don't want our president to fail. And that's absolutely true. We just want him to tell the truth.
Matt Post, your thoughts on the speeches? I'm sure you had quite a lot of strong opinions, considering that you're active with March for Our Lives, about the rhetoric or lack thereof on gun rights and gun legislation.
Yeah, I mean, like what was just said, this president can talk a great game when it comes to unity and criminal justice reform and women's rights. But, you know, as the civil rights leader Bayard Rustin told us, the proof that one truly believes is an action. And the action that we've seen from this guy are ghoulish and soulless. And that's what matters to me. And what was unsaid was about gun violence, about 96 people a day dying, which is the real national emergency. I thought Stacey Abrams did an amazing job, and I will be so disappointed if she does not go on to run for higher office, whether it's that Senate seat in Georgia or the Democratic nomination for president.
Justin, let me back up to you. You're a high school junior. You're about 17, 18 years old. Is that right?
17, yes, sir.
17 years old. So you've got an election coming up in 2020. Would this be your first national election voting in, or did you vote prior to this?
It would be my first.
Your very first. Well, first of all, let me congratulate you on about to become a brand new full citizen and
a
voter.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
What excites you the most about voting?
Well, of course, it excites me because I feel like I have a voice. You know, I can go march. I can participate in all the marches and attend all the town halls. But until you actually get a chance to step inside of the booth and cast your ballot for who you believe should be the president of the United States or your senator or your mayor, that's when you actually feel that you have a voice and you can make a positive change in our society.
Paint me a picture, Justin, to some of the kids that you go to school with. I'm not asking you to speak for everyone, but generally speaking, what's their feel on voting? Are they fired up about it? Are they kind of, you know, blasé about it? Where are their heads at in terms of voting?
Well, you know, I think I would be totally wrong if I painted you a pretty picture. I will have to tell you that a lot of the kids aren't too excited about voting because you have to understand when you're coming from a marginalized community and young people are raised up in that community for so long, they begin to feel that their vote doesn't matter. And sometimes that stops them from even going to the polls, before they're even legally able to. So I feel that's my job. If I'm here talking to you guys 5 days a week at school, I can at least persuade you to go vote. So I would say they're not too excited, but, you know, I call myself Mr. Superman, and I can say we're working on it.
Kate, I understand that you voted for Donald Trump in 2016. Based on what you've seen so far and based on what we heard last night at the State of the Union, which way might you be leaning in terms of 2020?
Well, I had kind of a moral dilemma when it came to voting in that election. I didn't vote for him in the primary, but ultimately I decided it was going to be a close race in Michigan, and I decided to use my voice because ultimately his policies align most of mine, whether or not I agree with him on his integrity or his character. There are a few things going into the 2020 election that I'm really going to have to reevaluate, I think. He's not the strongest on the Second Amendment. I'm more free trade than fair trade. I don't agree with him pulling out of Syria. So I think that I'm really going to have to reevaluate that. But I definitely don't regret voting for him because I think on paper he's done a really good job, whether or not you agree with his rhetoric.
With regards to 2020, David wrote on our Facebook page, kind of early to be talking about the 2020 elections. Perhaps we should wait another year and see how many more great things the current president has done for this country. Kate, let me stick with you. Are there any kinds of things that you might be looking for Donald Trump to do, or maybe not do, between now and the next election that would influence your vote?
Well, whether or not I agree with building the wall, I think that he really made that one of his selling points when he was running. So I think if he doesn't get that done, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. Personally, I'd like him to be a little bit stronger on the Second Amendment. I don't really agree with the views of the Attorney General he just appointed and a few of the things that he signed. But I think that if he remains staunchly pro-life, I would really appreciate that because that's one of the most important issues to me. And I think the economy is doing really well. I think if we stay on track and he keeps energizing people the way he did last night instead of tweeting, which kind of has a negative effect on his approval rates from what I'm understanding, I think that it'll be an interesting race.
And Matt, I'm sure you are immobilized and kind of fired up about voting in 2020, especially because you're involved with March for Our Lives. Was there anything in either of the speeches last night that influenced the way that you view your vote in 2020, or is your mind kind of made up?
I mean, it's just a reaffirmation that we need to get this guy out of the White House and moral leaders elected into office. I want to answer a question that you asked before, which is whether young people are voted or are excited to vote and energized to vote. And I think what makes young people different, first of all, is that we haven't been jaded enough by age to accept that things need to exist the way they are just because that's the way that we've always been. And we are growing up in a place, in a time where the status quo is increasingly dumb and stupid, right? There's a status quo that poor people don't deserve to have health care because they're poor, a status quo that says that we can put off saving our planet, a status quo that says gun manufacturer profits are worth more than kids' lives. We're on a planet and we have 12 years to save it, or our lives are going to get dramatically worse, and no one in power seems to be panicking. So the reason why the people I'm around seem energized to vote is because there's a clear impulse and reality that adults aren't stepping up. So we're going to have to do it ourselves.
Well, amen to not being jaded. Nobody ever got anything big or beautiful or grand done in a citizenry like the U.S. by being jaded. So kudos to you for that. We're also glad to get some of your comments of those of you listening in. John wrote on our Facebook page, "I'm 30, not sure if that counts as young anymore, but I voted in the primary and general election in 2018 for only the third time in my life. Prior to 2016, I was passive and indifferent to politics despite liberal philosophies. The election of Donald Trump was a huge wake-up call to me and many others my age. I've not only started voting, but have begun participating in local politics, donating to campaigns, and seeing politicians speak in person before I vote for them." I would love to hear from the three of you about what's kind of fired you up about politics, if there was one thing in particular, and what kind of keeps you going in politics as we continue with Kate Westa, Justin Smith, Matt Post, and we'll get to more of your comments in a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Babbel. Have you always wanted to speak a new language? Whether it's for travel, work, or brain training, Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons will get you speaking confidently in your new language. Choose from Spanish, French, and more. You'll learn through real-life dialogues, speech recognition, and interactive trainers. And Babbel's spaced repetition method actually makes you remember what you've learned. Download the app or go to Babbel, Babbel.com, to try Babbel for free.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the next episode of How I Built This, how one man reinvented airline travel again and again and again to create one of the most innovative airlines in the U.S., JetBlue. Check out David Neeleman's amazing story on our podcast, How I Built This.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing what drives young people to the polls with Kate Westa, a junior at the University of Michigan, Justin Smith, a junior in high school in Birmingham, Alabama, and Matt Post, a freshman at Yale, who's also a national field strategist for March for Our Lives. Kevin emailed, "I'm 22 years old, and I became interested in politics when I heard Bernie Sanders speak. Before that, I considered myself a conservative Republican who was concerned with the threat of climate change. I started evaluating my beliefs in college and realized that my parents were a large source of my identity as a Republican, and we increasingly disagreed on policy. I voted in 2016 for Hillary Clinton, and I've watched, read, or listened to the news every day since the election." Matt Post, it's interesting to hear how Kevin got fired up on politics. What got you engaged? Was it the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, out of which the March for Our Lives sprang, or was it something else?
I got involved in local politics in my community and just saw that politics was not this abstract concept that sort of had been explained to me. It's not something that just happens. It's something that people participate in and can be changed. And I think the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School activated me in a different way in recognizing the gross injustices in our political system and how corrupt our entire system is. I mean, we had 97% of the country supporting something, universal background checks, 77% of gun owners supporting it, something that was empirically proven to save lives. And here policymakers were refusing to vote for it. And it made me realize that, you know, as a policymaker, if you're valuing something else over preventing death and over the will of the people, then the system is broken, that things need to change and people need to step up.
You said you got involved with local politics. What got you involved in local politics?
I went to a school board meeting with my mom because there was a boundary decision up ahead, and I recognized that, hey, anyone can do this sort of thing.
Justin, what about you? What got you interested in politics?
Well, as I was growing up, I realized that young people didn't join political parties because they offer real change. They join to have a great joke to tell to their friends or family members. But with me, I like to joke and tell people when I was born, I came out watching CNN because I've always had a very passionate love for politics. So for me, I feel that I really got engaged when I was able to grow up and fully comprehend that the roads weren't being paved like our mayor promised, or when my people weren't able to afford quality housing. That realization only amplified my voice. But what really made me be that very outspoken, unafraid activist was when I lost a friend due to senseless gun violence here in Birmingham. But along the way, I must also give appreciation to the many adults who've helped and pushed me along the way and have given me those connections and networks that I need to be successful in the political field.
I'm guessing, Justin, if you're anything like me, that there were people along the way when they saw that you had this interest in, you know, watching CNN and asking why potholes weren't getting paved, that kind of helped you articulate that explained, like, this is how you contact a lawmaker, this is how you present yourself with a problem. Like, I'm guessing that somebody or some people mentored you in how to engage in politics. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. I also must give credit to my superintendent, Dr. Lisa Herring, and her staff. They are the ones who really gave me that push, because they are the first in the city of Birmingham to create a youth advisory council. And that council is what connected me to other adults and other young people with the same mind as me who I didn't even know existed. So, you know, it was so cool to me when I met other young people and I was like, you watch CNN too? Like, they were just cracking on me yesterday for watching CNN. I can't believe I'm not the only one. So it was such a surprise, and to me, it was God's gift.
Justin, I'm about the same age as CNN, so this
really?
Is a little yeah. CNN and MTV and I are all about. We were both born at about the same time, so it's a little bit strange to hear somebody.
Well,
say
I don't think you're too old, Ann.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate that, knowing I'm not too old.
You're welcome.
Kate, what about you? I'm curious as to how you got engaged, not just because you're involved and the co-president of this group, We Listen, but I wonder how much social media factored into the way you, Kate, engage with politics. We introduced you to that student, Jillian Jacobs from Birmingham, earlier. She also mentioned about how people her age are getting political information and interacting with politicians online.
Social media is one of the best ways to kind of look at things that are going on politically. It's what people use on their everyday. That's how people find the information. People aren't watching the news. My peers aren't watching the news. I watch it, but it's a rarity.
No, I watch the news.
You know, like, it's very few teens watching the news. They go to social media. So when you're looking at future voters, your future voters are on social media. Your future voters are on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and Twitter.
So unlike Justin, Jillian is not much for CNN. But Kate, how much did social media influence you getting more involved politically?
Yeah, so I think especially going into the 2016 election, social media played a role like we'd never seen before. And I was really not that active on Twitter or anything, but once I saw that that's where all the information was coming from, I think I kind of got more involved on that. And seeing the reaction and how quickly people respond on social media really made me realize how important this is going to be going forward and how it's proven to be. If you look at AOC and Beto and everyone having, you know, Facebook Lives or Instagram Lives, whatever, to answer questions, I think that's going to be the future of politics.
I'm sorry, AOC, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes.
Right.
And I think that that's really just going to be the future of how people are politically engaged. And I think it is a great outlet, but it also has some downsides.
Is it challenging, Kate, being on a campus like Michigan, which is full of bright, brilliant, wonderful students, but that have a lot of very strong feelings and engage in really intense political debates? How is it having those kinds of conversations at U of M?
So I'm also involved in the Young Americans for Freedom chapter at the University of Michigan, which is the largest conservative organization on our campus. And that serves as a great outlet for me to meet with like-minded people and discuss what's going on in the news. But it's also nice for me to be able to go to We Listen and have discussions with people who disagree with me and understand why they believe what they believe. And I think that really helps me find a common ground, especially on such a left-leaning campus.
Matt, what about at Yale? I know that you're a freshman, so I guess this is just your second semester at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like politically at Yale? Also a campus that is known for having very strong political views and a good deal of activism. How's it going?
Yeah, I mean, I've loved that activism community. But I think this conventional wisdom that this is some haven of radical leftism is just not true. I have friends who are conservatives, friends who are liberals, friends who are far left. The idea that this is an intolerant place for people of different political stripes and it's anything but a fairly centrist campus is just not true.
Lucy is a high school teacher, and Lucy emailed, "Very few of my students speak as if they are woke. Their primary knowledge of politics and the world in general seems to come from what they hear on Twitter, Facebook, and from celebrities. Only a few of my senior students can express themselves knowledgeably about what is happening in national or any global issues." Justin, I'd love you to react to that as the high schooler on the panel. What about Lucy's comment?
Well, I actually can kind of agree with her comment. Although I do watch CNN and television a lot, that is mainly what my media diet consists of. I try to stay away from social media simply due to the fact that there are so many opinions being formulated into one supposed to be fact. So I try to get a percentage of my information from multiple sources. But social media isn't just one of my main go-to sources of political information. And I can absolutely agree with Ms. Lucy's comment because I do see high school seniors and juniors today that pretty much say anything pertaining to politics. And as I have to steal this phrase from our president, it's usually fake news, and it's sometimes ludicrous.
Matt,
can I hop in here?
Yeah, Matt, please go ahead.
Well, I think it's a weird standard to hold students to a way higher percentage of political involvement or knowledge than adults, right? I mean, we've all seen those Jimmy Kimmel skits where they go out on the street and ask, would you prefer the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act? And all the adults are saying,
right,
oh, I love the Affordable Care Act, but hate Obamacare. And
which
then,
for those of you playing the home game, they're the same thing. But
same
go ahead.
Thing. And then, right, like we talk about fake news and susceptibility to this disinformation campaign from foreign governments. And who are the people falling for that? It's old people on Facebook who are most of the people using Facebook. So this idea that students and young people are less engaged or aware or knowledgeable than adults is so weird to me because I also served on a school board back home with people, you know, 30, 40 years my senior, and they fell for fake news. News too. I mean, it's a weird standard.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. Stay close.
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
Angie Thomas went from church secretary to best-selling author with her book, The Hate U Give.
Dang, I just can't come out the house now and look any kind of way. Somebody's going to be like, Angie Thomas was in Kroger in her robe. What? You know, I can't do that.
She tells me what's in book number two this week on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Let's get to a few more of your comments before we wrap up with our three guests. Phil emailed with regards to the State of the Union address, the lack of talk about health care or global climate change in Trump's speech was disheartening to me as a 20-something. However, I did find it interesting that he brought up socialism, even if it was negative. As someone who considered himself to be a socialist, it is nice to see the Overton window has shifted somewhat. The Overton window generally is a concept that refers to the window of items that are considered part of the public discourse. And as new ideas begin to take root and get more attention, they shift the window in that direction. Chris emailed, I came of age during the recession. My father lost his business of 35 years, and I participated in the Occupy Wall Street movement in 2011. This, and the campaign of Senator Bernie Sanders, completely changed my perspective on the power participating in politics has. HC emailed to says he's glad to say he's glad we're talking about young voters today. HC writes, it reminds me of my younger years when I was eligible for the military draft but couldn't have a glass of beer. I got politicized. Love to hear young folk getting connected. And Linda tweeted, these young people inspire this 60-something. Clearly, you have a lot of fans out there, and you are not alone in terms of being young people who are politically active or who want to be engaged. I know we're running out of time, but I'd love to get a sense of the ways that you would like to see politics change to engage more folks like you. Kate Westa, let me start with you. In terms of the way that you interact with politicians or would like to interact with politicians, what would be the most effective for folks like you to have meaningful interactions with today's political power structure?
I think social media is going to have a huge impact going forward, like I already said. You know, every representative pretty much has a Twitter, verified Twitter. And I think that that's really going to be utilized going forward, especially with elections. Personally, I've had a great experience at the University of Michigan through the Ford School of Public Policy, thanks to our connection with We Listen. And a lot of the events that they bring a lot of local politicians, city council members, and a lot of bigger names as well, and really give us the opportunity to speak with them and ask them our questions about politics and where that's going forward. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities to do that, especially at a local level. And I think if people really take advantage of that, then they're really going to see things shift in their own community.
So a little more awareness of local politics instead of always looking to what's going on in Washington?
I completely agree with that, yes.
Justin, what about party affiliation? How much does party matter when attracting folks your age?
How much does party matter? Great question. Well, of course, my peers and I consider myself a Democrat. But when asked how much does party matter for me, and speaking only on my behalf, when I look for a candidate whom I feel that I may vote for in the upcoming election, I have learned to not look at party, because sometimes we may have a candidate on the other side who will pursue and push something that you believe in. For example, we have a possible presidential candidate, Mr. Howard Schultz, who plans to run independent, and that's if he runs. Some of his ideas I agree with, but some of the things he believes in that he pushed, I don't agree with. So I would say party is not so much important, because we saw a lot of people in our previous presidential election switch over from the Democratic side to the Republican side. So in my opinion, it's not about party. It's about the person and what they believe in, their morals.
And we know from the 2016 race that a lot of independents found themselves drawn toward Donald Trump when in previous years they did vote more toward Democrats. So I hear you on that. Before we go, Matt Post, I wonder what you think in terms of attracting young adults to be politically active in the future. You're part of an organization that has a very clear policy agenda. Is that the key, to focus more on policy than party, or is there still a place for party affiliation in appealing to younger voters?
Young people reject labels. We are interested in policies and not people. And I think the way that you get more young people involved is by moving to the center, not the conventional wisdom center, which usually involves, you know, screwing over poor people, but things like a Green New Deal, which 64% of Republicans, 92% of Democrats support, Medicare for All, which 70% of voters support, top 70% marginal tax rate with 60% of people support, universal background checks, which 97% of people support. Those are the policies that are going to attract young people to the polls.
So you kind of put the screws to all political parties and say, this is what we want?
Yes, absolutely.
Matt Post, a freshman at Yale and a national field strategist for March for Our Lives. Matt, thanks for talking to us.
Absolutely.
Justin Smith, a high school junior from Birmingham, Alabama. Justin, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Kate Westa, a junior at Michigan and co-president of the student group We Listen. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks for having me.
Today's show was produced by our Across America team, Amanda Williams and James Morrison, and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about them and the rest of our team online at the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.